If this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, to cooks, to day laborers out in the Los Angeles community and throughout California and throughout the country.
I don't know that we'll have to imagine for much longer.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Tony.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, California, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. As usual, a lot of show today, but on Thursday, not too long before airtime, a U.S. senator in his own home state was very forcibly removed from a press conference of a Trump official, thrown to the ground and handcuffed. Yes, it's another landmark day in the Trump era. Out here in Los Angeles, as reported by AP this afternoon and now by others, California's U.S. Senator Alex Padilla was forcibly removed from a press conference being held by Homeland Security Chief Kristi Noem. Noem said Padilla did not ask her for a meeting, and she criticized his interruption during her remarks to the press. Video shows the senator being roughed up and hustled out of the room as he was trying to ask a question of Kristi Noem.
Sir, hands up. I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary, because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen felon criminals that you're rotating on your hands off.
You can hear her. She just continues to talk there in the background as the U.S. senator is being roughed up.
Which is what she always does. She
from,
just keeps talking.
Bill Melugin, I don't know if that's his name, of Fox News, who shot that particular video. He posted it to social media. He followed up with a tweet noting, quote, "I'm told Noem is in a room meeting with Senator Padilla right now." Don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he said. He said, "After I stopped recording, my team witnessed him being taken to the ground by FBI personnel, and he was temporarily detained." He says, "Awaiting further details on what happened, out of our view." Thankfully, someone else caught that video of Padilla being thrown to the ground and handcuffed by two officials wearing FBI gear and others who had no visible markings on them, presumably also federal officials, but who knows? They could be Noem's private security thugs. That part is unclear. Here's a bit of audio from that, of what happened in the hall after the U.S. senator in his own home state. He was formerly our Secretary of State out here after he was pushed out of a news conference with Donald Trump's Secretary of Homeland Security.
On the ground. Hands behind your back. Hands behind your back.
If you let me, you know, my hands, go ahead. Hand behind my back.
All right, cool.
Hands on your hand. Lay flat.
Other hand, sir. Other hand.
Just unbelievable. That's a U.S. senator on the ground there. California Governor Gavin Newsom blasted the violent removal from the room of Senator Padilla in a social media post, writing, quote, "Senator Alex Padilla is one of the most decent people I know," adding, "This is outrageous, dictatorial, and shameful. Trump and his shock troops are out of control. This must end now." But of course, it won't end now. It will only get worse. as I'm going to try to cover a little bit later today. Padilla gave remarks to reporters after he was released outside of the federal building and got a little bit choked up in the bargain.
And at one point, I had a question. And let me emphasize, just as we've emphasized the right for people to peacefully protest and to stand up for their First Amendment rights, for our fundamental rights. I was there peacefully. At one point, I had a question. And so I began to ask a question. I was almost immediately forcibly removed from the room. I was forced to the ground. And I was handcuffed. I was not arrested. I was not detained. I will say this. If this is how this administration responds to a senator with a question, if this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, to cooks, to day laborers out in the Los Angeles community and throughout California and throughout the country. We will hold this administration accountable.
By the way, even if you believe that it was rude for Senator Padilla to interrupt a news conference by Kristi Noem, and even if you believe that he should have been removed from the room for having done that, do you believe that he should have been thrown to the ground and handcuffed for it? A U.S. senator in the state that he represents, roughed up, thrown to the ground, thrown to the floor, handcuffed by federal officials, exercising his free speech rights during a news conference peacefully with a fellow, if unelected, federal official? Really? Yeah. And he wasn't arrested. He wasn't detained. But imagine those people, how those people who are not U.S. senators, who are arrested, who are detained, who are deported, are treated by some of those very same federal agents.
And also, I want to note that DHS has been lying their asses off about this. Kristi Noem went on TV and said he hadn't identified himself. And once he did identify himself, the handcuffs came off. No, you hear him and you can see him in the video identifying himself.
Right at the top of his comments,
exactly.
He says, "I'm Senator Padilla." Yeah.
Yes. So that's part of the lies that DHS is telling, trying to cover up what they actually did in roughing up a U.S. senator who was there to conduct oversight, which is both his job, and they have to allow him to do that.
I suspect we will be hearing more about that story in the hours and days ahead as things grow still grimmer in Donald Trump's police state. Also coming up, among other things, later this hour, our 1,500th Green News Report today with that lady whose voice you just heard. That's Desi Doyen.
Yep.
1,500, eh?
Yep.
And still haven't solved climate change.
No,
all right.
We have not.
But I will say this about 1,500th GNR. It is a doozy. And by doozy, I don't mean good doozy. I mean, like too much else these days, a grim doozy. But I probably should not say that right up at the top of the show if we want folks to hang around and listen to it later on this show. So it's fantastic. With all of that in mind, let's just say that after today's grim 1,500th GNR, we will send you home singing with a new Randy Rainbow tune, which I think we all need and which I think is particularly apropos after this week of covering Los Angeles. Does that make up for it? And since today's GNR and other news may be a little bit grim, as promised, let's start things off on a slightly brighter note and give you a few hits of dopamine, shall we? According to a large new poll from Quinnipiac University of some 1,265 self-identified registered voters nationwide, Donald Trump's job approval rating has now fallen to just 38%, a 3-point drop since Quinnipiac's last major polling in April. 54% of Americans, according to the survey, now disapprove. 54% disapprove of the job that Trump is doing as president. In the poll completed on June 9, that's this week, just as Trump was deploying federal troops on the U.S. homeland, against Americans. The bulk of this poll, therefore, was actually in the field as of June 5th. That was before, even before the protests of Trump's immigration raids even began out here much in Los Angeles, much less the deployment of U.S. troops against Americans. But that's not all the bad news for Trump in this poll, not by a long shot. They report that as the Senate debates the GOP tax and spending bill titled One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which will cut more than $1 trillion from health care and food assistance for low-income Americans. It will cut $4 trillion in taxes, however, mostly for the richest Americans in the country, and will add nearly $3 trillion to the national debt. And as Donald Trump pushes for a July 4 deadline to sign that measure, voters, 53 to 27%, oppose that legislation, with 20% not offering an opinion on it. So setting aside those without an opinion, that bill is currently 26 points underwater, with almost twice as many American voters opposing it as those who support it, including, by the way, 57% of self-identified independent voters oppose that measure as well. Interestingly, while the bill has already passed by Republicans in the U.S. House, I believe zero Democrats voted for it. It passed by one single vote in the House. It would, as it would slash hundreds of billions from Medicaid. Well, nearly half of voters in this poll, 47%, think federal funding for Medicaid should increase. 47% of Americans think Medicaid funding should increase, with 40% thinking it should stay about the same. Just 10% of registered voters believe the federal funding for Medicaid should be decreased, as it does big time, larger than any cut to Medicaid in history in the Republican Trump bill that he really, really wants to pass, despite previously vowing over and over again to never cut Medicare or Medicaid. And this bill would cut both of them by about $1 trillion. But it's not just that. On every issue that they polled on, Donald Trump is underwater. On the economy, trade, universities, his position on the Israel-Hamas war, the Russian-Ukraine war, and yes, his supposed signature issues of both immigration and deportation. Asked about Trump's handling of these issues, majorities of Americans opposed Trump's position on every single one of them, from 54 to 57%. On immigration, he's 11 points underwater, with Americans disapproving, 54 to 43. On deportations, he is 16% underwater. On the economy, also 16% in the red, with 56 disapproving of the way he's handling the economy, to just 40% of Americans who approve. On trade, his tariff policies, 57% disapprove, with just 38 approving. That is 19 points underwater on tariffs. His attack on universities is wildly unpopular at negative 17 points approval. And just 35% support his Israel policy, while 34% support the job that he is doing in the Russia-Ukraine war, which he promised to end within 24 hours after being elected president. In other words, he's failing everywhere on all the top issues right now, at least according to the opinions of the American voters, at least according to this one poll. According to Harry Enten, the CNN polling guru on social media, where he linked to this survey yesterday, he said, quote, "This is definitely one of Trump's worst polls, just horrible across the board. Net approval, minus 16 points. Oof. Opposition to the big, beautiful bill, just bad stuff all around," said Enten. And if you think that Trump is doing poorly with a 38% approval rating before even reaching 6 months in office, when new presidents traditionally enjoy their highest approval ratings during the first 6 months. Well, don't ask about folks like his former buddy Elon Musk, with an approval rating in the poll of just 30%. RFK Jr. enjoys 38% support, like Trump. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, he clocks in with just 37% support from the American people. Or at least the 1,265 registered voters in Quinnipiac's newest polling. And while, yes, as I said, that is just one poll, it does seem to be tracking with other new polls out this week. For example, AP NORC has new polling out today of a little over 1,100 Americans from that same June 5 to June 9 period. Again, with much of the survey in the field before, what the protests and the response to it kicked off over the weekend in L.A., that one finds that Trump's approval is 39%. That's off 2 points since May, with disapproval at 60%, up 3 points since the since last month's AP survey.
So that's pretty consistent disapproval of everything Trump is doing across at least two polls.
It sure seems to be. Trump's approval on handling immigration in the AP poll has fallen 3 points since last month. Disapproval is up by two. He is underwater on immigration. His signature issue by 7 points, according to AP today. And on the economy, just 38% approve and 60% disapprove of Donald Trump's handling of the economy. The one thing that many Americans were actually dumb enough to believe that Trump was good at, economic issues. On that, he's now 22 points underwater in this new polling. All of this as protests against Trump and his administration are only now beginning to fire up across the country in major cities from coast to coast following his deployment of military troops against Americans here in Los Angeles. And in thousands of cities in every state coming up this Saturday and the long-planned No Kings marches organized by a coalition of more than 100 civil rights and other groups for June 14. You can get more information at nokings.org if you'd like to find a demonstration near you. But these are going to be larger than they would have been, I suspect, thanks to Trump and the administration militarizing the nation this week. So they're going to be far bigger than they probably would have been just a week or so ago. And as you likely know, those peaceful protest marches have long been scheduled for June 14, but it happens to be Donald Trump's birthday, apparently, when he's also throwing himself a first-of-its-kind Red Square dictator-style military parade, ostensibly to celebrate his, celebrate the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army. But as I understand it, both the Navy and the U.S. Marines are also 250 years old this year. And apparently they ain't getting a party. They aren't scheduled to have a military parade to recognize that landmark, perhaps because they made the mistake of having birthdays this year that were different from the president's. But of course, as you know, Trump, a multi-time draft dodger, pretends to love the troops. Apparently, he loves them so much that he's been forcing them to, he's going to force them to parade for him on his birthday, the birthday of the U.S. Army. And out here in L.A., he's forced soldiers to sleep on the floor or on the streets as he federalized National Guard members to come to Los Angeles against the wishes of the governor and the mayor, and apparently without much planning. But hey, if you're going to force them into this unnecessary duty and force them to sleep on the cold, hard floor of a federal building in L.A., the least you could do is pay them for that duty, no? Well, apparently, no. Apparently not. According to military.com, a media outlet obviously focused on issues concerning the military and its service members, military.com reported last night the 4,000 California National Guard soldiers who President Trump surged into L.A. remain unpaid due to delays in issuing official activation orders, leaving compensation and benefits in limbo. Well, that's nice. According to more than a dozen guardsmen across four units who spoke to military.com, none has received formal activation orders, the critical paperwork that not only authorizes their duty status but also unlocks pay, TRICARE health benefits, and eligibility for Department of Veterans Affairs services. Without those orders, troops remain in a legal and administrative limbo. Multiple defense officials with direct knowledge of the situation told military.com the chaotic and sudden activation of troops has effectively clogged up the flow of administrative work. Yeah, that sounds like the Trump administration. Those guardsmen will likely receive formal orders and the proper back pay within the next few days, but that has not eased the concern for troops anxious over potential financial strain and juggling family logistics, as the Guard does not assist with things like child care or pet care. Some part-time troops reported leaving better-paying civilian jobs without clarity on how much they will earn while they are mobilized. The financial implications of how those orders are written is significant. Depending on how long troops are activated and how the orders are written, soldiers may or may not qualify for basic housing allowances, which could amount to an additional $3,000 to $5,000 per month, depending on rank and location in the Los Angeles area.
Gosh, I hope they're at least feeding them.
Well, there's more. There's something in here from military.com on that, too. I'll get to that in a moment. The administrative snafu, says military.com, is indicative of a slapdash mission where the welfare of troops has not been a priority. Several service members described inadequate living conditions at staging areas like the military facility at Naval Weapons Station Seal Beach on the outskirts of Los Angeles, where soldiers are sleeping outside on cots because of a shortage of space. Others cited intermittent issues with, yes, food and fuel supplies. The Pentagon estimates the mission, the Battle of Los Angeles, I guess, will be 60 days. And acting department comptroller testified at a House budget hearing on Tuesday that the cost of deploying the National Guard in L.A. will be $134 million. So add that, by the way, to the $40 million that is supposedly being spent by the military, by U.S. taxpayer dollars for Trump's birthday parade, which seems like it seems like actually really low number to me, $40 million. But remember, this is the administration who has cut off tiny grants to doctors and researchers for cancer research and so much more, claiming that, well, we just can't afford that sort of waste, fraud, and abuse. But if you're looking for actual waste, fraud, and abuse, guess what? I think we found some. His dumb parade and his ridiculous assault on the people of Los Angeles with the military. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, a National Guard vet himself, told lawmakers part-time soldiers may see a much greater role in domestic missions. He said, quote, "I think we're entering another phase, especially under President Trump, with his focus on the homeland, where the National Guard and reserves become a critical component of how we secure that homeland," Hegseth told lawmakers. Are you paying attention? Images of soldiers sleeping on the floor went viral earlier this week. The governor, Gavin Newsom, blasted the federal response in a post on social media directed at Trump at the beginning of the week. He said, quote, "You sent your troops here without fuel, food, water, or a place to sleep. If anyone is treating our troops disrespectfully, it is you," the governor said. So here's more on that food question you asked about,
yes.
Des. Local donations from businesses such as pizza shops, which are apparently a staple of domestic guard deployments, they often help fill the gaps. But guess what? This time, military.com reports that the community has largely stayed away. One mid-level officer said that their unit would receive, quote, extremely generous help when deployed to do things like combat wildfires.
Yes.
Including water and sports drinks and food, which played a significant role in morale at the time and it tightened the guard community relationship. But, quote, this is a situation where we're against the community, the officer told military.com on the condition of anonymity to avoid retaliation. Correct. They are against the community. They are against us. They are against the American people. Unlike, you know, during the wildfires earlier this year when they were here and they were welcomed. But nobody in LA wants members of the military policing our streets, the streets of our city. But it is not just here, of course, and it's not just big cities where federal officials are terrorizing the populace, as Trump's ICE goons are now raiding car washes and Home Depots and farm fields. Now, apparently with the support of the U.S. military in LA and perhaps elsewhere very soon, according to his defense secretary. But it's hardly the only, large cities where these pathetic roundups of people simply trying to make a living and put food on their families' tables are now underway in Donald Trump's and the Republican Party's new American police state. And no, I realize it might sound like a, you know, a right-wing radio host using that phrase, but no, that is really what we have right now. Where even apparently U.S. senators can be thrown to the ground and handcuffed if they dare to step out of line. Of course, given the Gestapo-like tactics of these immigration roundups, and yes, I chose that word very carefully and specifically, given the tactics now being used by federal officials, it is becoming harder and harder to even know if these thugs are actually federal officials at all, as the Washington Post's Catherine Rampell detailed on Wednesday. She writes, maybe they really were immigration officers, just as they claimed, or maybe they were a ragtag vigilante group arbitrarily snatching brown-looking people off the streets. Quote, it could have been like a band of the Proud Boys or something, said Linda Shafiroff, recounting the agents who showed up outside her office in masks and tactical gear and refused to show IDs, warrants, or even the names of any criminals they were supposedly hunting in her small town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, recently. As unrest and military troops overtake Los Angeles, writes Rampell, terrifying scenes are also unfolding in smaller communities around the country. They, too, are being invaded by what resembles a secret police force, often indistinguishable from random thugs. Shafiroff and business partner Sarah Steiner own a boutique home design and construction firm in Great Barrington, a New England town largely populated by artists, aging hippies, affluent second home owners. On May 30, around 11 a.m., six armed agents showed up outside the women's office. The agents were dressed as though they had parachuted into a war zone. Rather than a small town where the crosswalks are painted in rainbows. The paramilitary resembling group approached a Hispanic man who was outside the design office picking weeds. The man did not work for Shafiroff and Steiner's design firm, but rather for a local landscaping company. Neither she nor Steiner knew the gardener's name, but they had seen him around several times. He seemed friendly. They were also incensed by what looked like an extra-legal abduction unfolding in front of their eyes in their own parking lot. These guys had guns hanging all over them, said Shafiroff, but they otherwise had no conformity to their dress. She said, quote, none of them had the same letters on the front of their vests. Some of them didn't even have letters, but it said police across the back. One had light-colored jeans or sneakers on. One had a Red Sox hat on. The agents arrived in this tiny town in unmarked cars, some with out-of-state plates. The women asked to see IDs or warrants or even the names of the alleged criminals that these masked agents were there to track down. They refused, as Shafiroff had the presence of mind to videotape at least part of the encounter on her company's gravel parking lot in this tiny town.
Okay, you want people driving drunk in here?
I don't want people driving drunk. Okay, so, I have asked for IDs. Can you please tell me that you refuse to give us your IDs?
We don't need to give you IDs.
You don't need to give us
federal.
IDs.
We do not need to give you IDs.
So how do we know you're federal? How do we know you're federal? So
you call the locals.
Call the locals.
We did call the locals.
You're... This is the orange menace. This is our police state. This is our police state. So no IDs, unwilling to take their masks off, unwilling to give us their names, unwilling to do what I've been told our right is by these people. This gentleman can barely get in the car. He's being forced in and his hands jammed behind his back. And we have, all they say is they're looking for someone who is a drunk driver, but these aren't the guys. This is, you should be ashamed of yourself. Show your face.
They're ashamed. Why would they show their face?
Because they're ashamed. You can't even see an ID. We just have to take your honesty with your face covered that you are who you are.
We just wanted to ask questions like this.
You didn't ask any. We wanted to ask. We want to know who you are.
We couldn't continue our conversation with them because you guys were interfering, right?
We weren't. No, we asked for your ID, and we have the right to ask for your ID.
Okay.
Yep. So this video will be going to the newspaper.
All right, ladies. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go trade your mask for your white robe?
Yeah. Why don't you go trade your mask for your white effing robes, she asked. And she's right. I mean, the only difference between someone, you know, riding in a town in a white hood and taking away an apparent migrant or any minority is that, well, now they hide under masks instead. But they claim to be federal authorities. Are they? Who knows? Are they MAGA hoodlums? Are they racist Proud Boys? Are they any of the 1,500 or so convicted criminals and violent felons who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, but were all of them pardoned and released from prison, despite many being violent, attempted cop killers and seditionists, and yes, the worst of the worst that Donald Trump has released onto our streets? Could that be them? Who knows? Rempel says one of these thugs briefly flashed a badge, according to Steiner, but would not let her inspect it, even to see what agency it was for. She said it could have been from Cracker Jacks. The gardener, who was rounded up here, did not appear to understand what these officers were even asking him. Another man who had been working the landscape project with him immediately went into the office and shut the door after seeing these masked agents arrive. The gardener was eventually put in the back of the unmarked car and driven away. Shafiroff, who described the incident as part of the new police state, said she has since heard through mutual acquaintances that the man is now being detained in an immigration facility, perhaps near Boston. She doesn't know. She said that she had been told the worker's family was unable to determine his whereabouts for several days. So it's not just Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or Philadelphia. They are coming to your hometown. And they may or may not actually work for the federal government. Apparently, they don't show their faces or their badges because they are cowards. Rampell notes it's easy to buy tactical gear online. And around the country, bigots and criminals have already begun taking advantage of chaotic, masked immigration raids to further their own ends. Civilians have impersonated ICE agents while committing robbery in Pennsylvania, kidnappings in Florida and South Carolina, sexual assault in North Carolina, and other forms of public intimidation in Washington State and California. Some Democratic leaders, she notes, have demanded that ICE agents show their faces and present ID when carrying out enforcement actions so they can at least be differentiated from anonymous hooligans. But Republican lawmakers have fiercely opposed such efforts, claiming that asking federal officials to identify themselves would put agents in, quote, extreme danger. Really? What about us? What about putting us in extreme danger? What are we in extreme danger from any psychopath who decides to put on a mask and body armor and strap himself up with weaponry to claim that he is a federal agent and do God knows what? Meanwhile, observes Rampell, President Trump ordered the arrest of protesters simply for wearing masks. Quote, and this is in all caps, masks will not be allowed to be worn at protests, Trump posted on social media on Sunday. Quote, what do these people have to hide and why, he asked. Well, good question, Mr. President. Perhaps you should ask it of your own shock troops, your own Gestapo now terrorizing the country. What do these people have to hide and why? This seems like a reasonable question to ask of federal law enforcement officers, writes Rampell. This is America, after all. It's not supposed to have a secret police force. And our country's history of roving bands of masked men rounding up undesirables is a long, ugly one. Apparently, it is now getting longer and uglier. More news is next on today's Bradcast, including, more bad news for California. On an entirely different front in the Trump-Republican war on the Golden State. That story, our 1500th Green News Report, and maybe, if time, Randy Rainbow are all still ahead on today's Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Lingers in your ear, but you can't forget from sundown to sunset. Nah, nah. It's all in the air, you hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gonna grab a hold on you. California soul. California soul.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com in Los Angeles, California. All right. I've been trying to cover this story actually for weeks now, going back to before Memorial Day, even though I've had to push it off each and every day since then because of other news sadly taking precedent. But now, as these bills have finally been passed in both GOP-controlled houses of Congress. And as I understand it, Trump has now.
Yes, he has.
Signed these bills at the White House on Thursday. Well, we need to finally get to it since it's appalling and not to mention a huge violation of the so-called states' rights that Republicans pretend to believe in, at least when a Democrat is in the White House. So, Desi Doyen, what happened today at the White House to once again put the lie to that age-old Republican con? As I understand, California has already filed yet another lawsuit against this, and the administration, I guess before the ink has even dried from Trump's Sharpie.
Yeah. So on Thursday, Trump at the White House signed three resolutions that block California's emissions rules for cars and trucks and pollution, too. Part of a longtime goal that Republicans have had for decades to knock out any and all pollution restrictions that might reduce the profits of the fossil fuel industry. Mm-hmm. Now, the congressional Republicans did this under the Congressional Review Act. That's a 1996 law passed under House Speaker Newt Gingrich, a Republican, that allows Congress to overturn recent federal rules that were adopted in the waning days of the previous presidential administration. Under the Congressional Review Act, a simple majority is required, so it can't be filibustered. Mm-hmm. And the law also says it is not subject to judicial review.
But this isn't, these aren't, well, I'll let you
yes, get, we're gonna get to that in just
okay,
a moment.
Go ahead,
so
yeah.
In May, the Republican-controlled House voted to do that revocation of California's special waiver from the EPA established in 1970 to establish its own more stringent tailpipe pollution rules under the Clean Air Act. That's a waiver that was intended to help clean up the state's really terrible air pollution.
Right.
The waiver has worked and it continues to work. Asthma rates have dropped dramatically in the state since the waiver was enacted.
We're allowed out here in California to have stricter rules than
yes.
the federal rules because we want to clean up our air and
yes.
make it safe for our citizens.
And it's necessary okay. and it worked. Now, the Clean Air Act waiver was passed by Congress, and it also permitted other states to adopt California's tailpipe standards. 16 states have done so. Car makers, of course, don't want to make multiple lines of cars for different states, so everybody has benefited from better clean air and cleaner cars thanks to California's waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So in late May, Senate Republicans voted along party lines to also revoke California's waivers to establish its own tailpipe standards. Now, what they did in this case is both
they voted against allowing California to decide what California cars can be sold and so forth.
Exactly. So they used the Congressional Review Act in this case, but in this case, it's unprecedented and unlawful. The Government Accountability Office affirmed their own decisions previously that they have already made that said these California waivers are waivers, not rules, therefore not subject to the Congressional Review Act.
They can't just be overturned.
Senate parliamentarians said the same thing.
Agreed.
So Senate Republicans overruled the Senate parliamentarian and basically blew up the filibuster
yep.
so that California would be forced to have polluted air again, and so they could protect big oil industry profits.
They had no problem blowing up the filibuster where Democrats were terrified to, well, at least a couple of them
Kirsten
who are no longer Sinema in the Senate,
yeah.
To save voting rights.
Exactly. So what they
and
did,
these people did it to pollute California and the nation.
Yeah, so what they did were three different rules. One was the California's landmark first in the nation phase out of sales of new internal combustion engine cars and trucks in 2036. 10 years from now, it only applies to the sale of new cars in the state. You can still buy a used ICE car if you want. You can also bring in one from another state.
You can go to Arizona and buy yourself
a new
combustion engine car. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was supposed, the phase out was supposed to have started next year. And part
that is the EV mandate that Donald Trump kept pretending existed.
And it's not
yeah.
a mandate.
No.
It is requiring
right.
basically that dealers need to offer buyers zero emissions vehicles.
Yep.
If you go to a dealership, it's often hard to find them carrying
yep.
any electric vehicles.
Yep.
This would require them to carry both electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids that also use gas. So you're not forced to buy an EV. You can buy a plug-in hybrid. So the second thing Republicans also did was they revoked additional California clean air rules that tightened tailpipe pollution standards for heavy-duty diesel trucks, because they're the biggest contributor to California's smog. And third, Republicans also revoked California's advanced clean trucks rule, which would have required that half of all new trucks on sale in the state by 2035 also be zero emissions. So half by 2035, 10 years from now.
What business is that of theirs anyway, what we do here in California?
Well, that's that old states' rights con, as you mentioned.
Yep.
So Trump, on Thursday, in his typically inaccurate and incoherent remarks, he claimed that he was rescuing the U.S. auto industry from California's gas car phase-out, but he's actually helping to kneecap U.S. competitiveness. Pretty much all auto industry analysts say that the U.S. is really falling behind China in global market dominance for EVs, and these rules that they're revoking force the electric vehicle market to go to countries like China. China already accounts for 2/3 of all global electric car sales in 2024. That's up from 50% in 2021. So electric vehicles are, of course, the main threat to the demand for oil, and this move further cements China as the global leader in producing electric vehicles.
Oh, yeah, but the fossil fuel companies are very, very happy about it, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are. Now, California leaders have responded. They're going to sue, but they're also going to develop new rules that will encourage the use of electric vehicles.
That will be even stronger,
yes,
as I understand it. That, according to the governor, who calls this an all-out assault on California. This time, he's destroying our clean air and America's global competitiveness. In the process,
yep.
He's absolutely right.
Yes.
And of course, this is just one big, huge gift to the fossil fuel companies. And screwing over California and our own state's rights to decide what kind of clean air we want or not. When is it any of their business? If this is such a disaster, the voters could vote out the officials who passed these laws out here in California. But we haven't, because we like them. Unfortunately, that is not the only betrayal of democracy and the lives and the health of American people by Republicans and the administration this week, as sadly discussed in our latest Green News report. But don't get too sad, because as soon as it's done, we're going to share some Randy Rainbow with you to help cheer you up.
We're going to give out less money. We're going to give it out directly. It'll be from the president's office.
Trump plan to dismantle FEMA means states must kowtow to Trump.
The Trump administration says the rollbacks are mainly a response to complaints from the fossil fuel sector.
EPA to revoke power plant pollution rules. Plus, Republican majority in Congress succeeds in killing off California's clean car standards.
All of those idiotic stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, when we had the wildfires that devastated big chunks of our city, he did absolutely nothing. Now that we're in the middle of a non-emergency, send in the National Guard.
I've got nothing to add. This is your 1500th Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, sounds like you've got 6 maddening minutes of news, so let me just take the moment to say it's our 1500th Green News Report. Congratulations. And have we fixed climate change yet?
Sadly, no, we have not. But congratulations to you, too.
Thank you very much. Bad job. What do you have for us today?
Well, first, hurricane season is off to an unusually fast start, at least in the Pacific. The first hurricane there usually doesn't form until the last week of June. But unusually warm ocean waters off the coast of Mexico have produced 3 named storms so far this season. For U.S. states at risk of Atlantic hurricanes, Donald Trump said this week that he plans to, quote, wean states off of disaster assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, but he'll wait until after hurricane season.
Wean them off like it's a favor that he's doing to help them survive a disaster?
Something like that. Then he's going to dismantle the vital agency and force states to shoulder the burden of response and recovery. To be clear, states have always led the disaster response and only seek federal aid if they need additional assistance. In the Trump regime, federal disaster aid will instead be doled out on a case-by-case basis, with the White House determining disaster relief funding decisions. Here's White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt.
This president has made it clear we're not going to enable states to make bad decisions with federal tax dollars, and then the president will deeply and thoughtfully consider any requests for federal aid that come to his desk.
So if states want federal aid, they have to appeal to Donald Trump personally in the Oval Office.
Yes. Emergency management experts warn that states do not have the trained personnel or the funds to respond in the middle of a major disaster. That is why FEMA was created. It's especially concerning as climate change increases the frequency and intensity of extreme weather disasters. And on Wednesday, the chief of FEMA's National Storm Response Coordination Center resigned.
I'm glad to hear it. This is going to be a disaster.
On Thursday, Trump signed three congressional resolutions attacking California's efforts to clean up its notorious air pollution. House and Senate Republicans flouted both the law and precedent to revoke the state's decades-old authority to implement the nation's toughest tailpipe pollution and emission standards, and they ignored rulings by the Government Accountability Office and the Senate parliamentarian to do so. Trump also signed congressional resolutions barring California's stronger pollution standards for new diesel trucks, a primary contributor to smog, and Trump signed a third Republican resolution barring California's landmark plan to phase out the sale of new gasoline-only cars and trucks by 2035.
And once again, I've got nothing to add, at least nothing that the FCC will allow me to add.
And finally, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency on Wednesday proposed to significantly weaken Biden-era limits on pollution and emissions from power plants. First, EPA moved to roll back air pollution standards, limiting power plant emissions of toxic mercury and other poisonous chemicals that sicken and harm Americans, especially the nation's children. Experts say those pollution rules currently save 30,000 lives a year and $275 billion in public health costs. EPA also proposed eliminating all Biden-era greenhouse gas emission standards for fossil-fueled power plants, which experts say will significantly increase U.S. emissions that cause man-made climate change. Both actions are a huge gift to the fossil fuel industry.
Desiree, you have had some grim green news reports over the years. You may have outdone yourself on the 1500th episode.
Yep.
Congratulations. For much more on all of these grim stories and the ones we didn't have the heart to get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your 1500th Green News Report.
I got it bad, and that ain't good.
No, it is no good at all. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, and congratulations once again on 1,500 Green News Reports, no matter how grim almost all of them are.
But, it is what it is.
Anyway, yeah, it is what it is. Good job. All right, but as promised, to cheer you up, because we never like to send you home, too sad over the weekend. And I think apropos, after this past week spent covering Los Angeles, as promised, it is the latest Randy Rainbow.
We need smart people to lead this country.
Hello, friends. Are you feeling a bit frazzled lately?
You know, like constant explosive diarrhea frazzled? Is your morning coffee starting to taste a little less rise and shine and a little more stand back and stand by? Have you started yelling, my body, my choice, at your toaster?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm no licensed medical professional, but I do pretend to know what I'm talking about a lot on social media. And according to TikTok and this current administration, that makes me a doctor. I believe you're suffering from a common condition. Recently rejected by Health Secretary RFK Jr. for possibly containing trace amounts of science and observable reality. It's called TDS. Have I prepared a whole ass song about it? Of course.
Again, that TDS.
And no, that doesn't stand for totally deserved screaming. Perhaps you break out in hives whenever you hear January 6th referred to as a peaceful protest. Maybe you've started fact-checking your six-year-old niece at her own birthday party. Even your own family members may start distancing themselves, mistaking your pesky common sense for being overdramatic or emotionally unstable, like my family did. And what the hell do they know? Well, friends, if any of this sounds familiar, don't you fret. There's an epidemic that's quite pervasive, I have found. Some laugh it away, but seems it's here to stay. So let's check off some symptoms of this syndrome going round. The stress when your country's a mess, or the blues when you turn on the news feeling sick. When you look at this prick, that's Trump derangement. If you miss when facts were all true, feel insane, cause you have half a brain or bereft, cause democracy's F. That's Trump derangement. You might get a fright when the stock market's red, or itch when they ditch the Department of Ed. You could spend 4 years in bed, girl. It certainly ain't psychosis. I'll give you your diagnosis. You smoke, cause they say you're just woke. Overspend, cause you're scared he might end humankind. You're not losing your mind. The world is enraged, enraged with a world of Trump derangement. And honey, there's no prescription. You burn when our allies all turn or get gassed. When he acts like an ass, day and night. You're not sick, you're just right. The world is enraged, irate and perturbed. No, you're not deranged, insane or disturbed. The world is enraged, enraged for the world of Trump derangement. Take two martinis and call me in 4 years.
Oh, I will. Boy, did I need that. Thank you very much, Randy. Thanks also to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, want to hear it again, want to share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do it anytime for free at bradblog.com. While you're there, please, please consider helping us buy a couple of those martinis by hitting one of those donate buttons, or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. You are the only ones who do that. You. Yes, I mean you. You. Very good. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog, and you can congratulate Desi Doyen on her 1,500th episode of the Green News Report on the social medias.
At Green News Report.
She is a very prolific social media person, so you can follow her there, say hello, and send her my best. All right, that's it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
The world is enraged, enraged for the world of Trump derangement.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.